All right, I call the meeting to order. And let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance. All right, got a couple things under the chair's report. First of all, mileage reimbursements, if you have any of those for 2009, the deadline for submitting those is January 31st. A lot of them have come in the last few days, but if yours is one that we haven't gotten yet, keep in mind that deadline. Get them either to the chair's office or to the county clerk's office. Either is fine. But if you do want to get any sort of compensation, you need to have your vehicle insurance on file, and that would be on file with your office, right? Okay, so if you submit your reimbursement and they don't have that on file, you will not be getting a check. I did get a thing from the airport manager. Let me just tell you real briefly what it says. The City of La Crosse is preparing to undertake a project to develop an airport zoning ordinance. And they're hoping that that'll preserve and protect the airport as well as those persons located in proximity of the airport. What they're looking for is to put together a community technical advisory committee. And I'm not sure why they call it technical advisory committee, because I think what they're looking for is people in the community who at least have an interest in the airport and zoning issues. They're going to be meeting over approximately a 12-month period. And the impression I get, I think, is that it's approximately monthly. So if anybody is interested in serving on this, Jeff Schrader is on the aviation board. It could certainly be him on this, or it could be another person from the county board who is interested. So talk to me afterwards, but after this meeting tonight. But their first meeting is January 20th at 4:30. At the airport terminal. So if anybody is interested, see me after the meeting tonight. Tara Johnson.
What are they being protected from?
What's who being protected from?
The airport is wanting to protect the airport. What are they being protected from?
Probably having to do with development around the airport. What kind of, you know, zoning issues in terms of what could you put near the airport. I assume they wouldn't want skyscrapers, but I don't know what else they wouldn't want around there or do want. But cell towers would probably be another good one. But if you are curious about what that may be, then volunteer. All right, supervisor conference reports. Are there any of those tonight? None. All right, let's go on to cards and correspondence are always over there. And there won't be any meetings during recess because there won't be a recess. And that gets us up to the proclamation. Mr. O.
Proclamation, January 2010, Highway Safety Transportation Month. Whereas staff works so diligently to build safe roads for the residents of La Crosse County and visitors to travel upon them, whereas maintenance such as snow plowing, salting, grading shoulders, mowing, repairing, sealing, sweeping, and paving roads and many other duties keep La Crosse County highways clean and safe, and whereas the safety of all traveling persons is ensured by the hardworking men and women of the Highway Department, now therefore be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of January 2010 as La Crosse Highway Safety Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of persons dedicated to ensuring safe roads for La Crosse County residents and visitors. And I note that Denny Osgood, our capable Highway Commissioner, is here and doing a great job for us.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, second by Mr. Brockmiller. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Mr. Chair, the next item under my report, as Hank is coming up, has a very educational presentation on dioxins and emissions and waste energy. I want to just highlight two additional items unrelated. We just got the Wisconsin County's Legislative Conference registration for February. So if you look ahead to your calendar, that's February 9th and 10th. That's the Tuesday, Wednesday. So at the next two committee days, we will be talking about how we'll adjust those schedules if we need to for people to go to WCA. If you want to go to the WCA Legislative Conference, you need to work with Margaret and work with Mr. Doyle as far as attending. We usually don't have everyone attend. This is in Madison. It's the Legislative Conference and prepares for our interaction with the legislative session. If you've got any questions after the meeting, talk with me about it. I've got information on that as well. well.
Steve, what does it list for the deadline for signing up? People need to know that.
January 25th, Monday, January 25th. So I will remind you at next week's county board meeting, there are a few of you that didn't make it but to this meeting, but I'll remind you of that. Please let us know if you want to go. I know many people that have gone, particularly members of the legislative committee, found it worthwhile. You learn a great deal of new information as well as a chance to interact with legislators on county issues. It's Tuesday and Wednesday, February 9th and 10th. So it doesn't conflict with the Monday night meeting like we're doing policy planning, but it conflicts with the next two committee days. So sometimes we've adjusted those or worked around it. And the next item, and I won't pass this out. This is an extra handout if you want, but many of you might know that we're doing a great deal of work with LADCO and the Chamber and the Convention Visitors Bureau on high-speed rail and promoting the river route through La Crosse. You adopted a resolution at your last meeting on that. A number of events that we're doing to promote the asset that we already have includes that Saturday, January 23rd, people from the other side of the river all the way through La Crosse are going to be linking up and having press events all along the way to go to the Bucks Timberwolves game that night in Milwaukee. Obviously, this is all on our own time, our own money, that type of thing. So there is no public money as part of this. But myself, representatives of the Convention Visitors Bureau from St. Paul, Red Wing, Winona. So there'll be a number of people coming from the Minnesota side as well as La Crosse to go down to an event in Milwaukee. We'll see the Bucks and Timberwolves play. We're hoping to get an audience with Senator Cole to just ask him. It's Saturday, January 23rd. All the cost information is on the handout. Very reasonable. The entire cost for double occupancy with train ticket, game ticket, and hotel room is $146. Round trip, that's everything. Except for meals, $195 single occupancy. So I know not all of you will be interested. I'll set this off to the side. I didn't make copies for everybody because I didn't think all of you would want to go. Again, if you want to ask about this, we're hoping to get a chance to talk with Senator Cole and let him know about our support for the river route and also enjoy an evening at Senator Cole's basketball court. So it'll be. We've been working with John to try to get that audience as well. Pretty much the Wolves are having a pretty poor year, so it's I'm sorry about that, but I just wanted to pass those two items on, and now I'll turn it over to Hank for our docs and report.
Thank you. Tonight I'm going to bring some information to you that I think will help you understand some things that may become topics that will be discussed in the next couple months. And my purpose tonight is to inform you and share some of this information with you. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk a little bit about dioxin tonight. I'm going to talk about what's happening in emissions of dioxin in our nation and locally, past and present. I'm going to talk about how waste-to-energy plants, such as French Island, compares to coal combustion in terms of emissions. I'm going to talk about greenhouse gas emissions. I'm going to talk about, is waste energy truly a green technology? Then we're going to get into some more timely topics right now. What's the relationship to waste energy and the recycling of plastics right here in our local community? And I'm going to take all this information at the end, and I'm going to try and share with you what I think it means to you as leaders and supervisors for La Crosse County. In the last year or so, there's been a lot of, in the last 2 years, there's been a lot of discussion with dioxin, and Steve asked me to pull that information together and try and give some distinct understandings of what is happening with these emissions. So let's start with what is dioxin. It's it is a toxic compound. There's over 200 and some types of dioxins. It's like ice creams. There's many different flavors. There's 17 of them that you have to worry about that are toxic. But their toxicity varies. You can have one that is has a low toxicity. Another one is 10,000 times as toxic. So when people talk to you about dioxin, it's really a family of chemicals. The important point also is that EPA classified dioxins as a human carcinogen, and this is a compound we have to be worried about in society, and we have to properly respect it. We want to make sure that it is properly being monitored and we understand the emissions and that it is being properly controlled. Here's some charts, and what I did is I went to the consultant for La Crosse County, HDR, that works with waste energy, and I asked them to put together some data on dioxin emissions and that. And they looked at way back to the 1980s, and you don't have to worry about reading the chart, but look at the red. That's the important thing to look at. And if you look at the red, what you'll see is on the first chart, it's quite large. So back in the 80s, we had a lot of dioxin emissions from waste to energy and incinerators that had garbage in it. As you move to the 90s, you can see it has been reduced. And as you move to 2000, the graph on the bottom, you can see it's just a little sliver. Now it's gone way down. If you look at that bottom chart and you study this information and you look across our nation, you'll find that the dioxin emissions from burn barrels accounts for roughly 8.5%. The dioxin emissions from waste to energy is about 1.3%. So the emissions from burn barrels is about six times. Yes?
Sorry to interrupt, but what's the huge lavender piece?
Forest fires. Isn't that interesting? That's a great question because, wait a second, where are these people throwing all this plastic out in the woods that's burning, creating this? Do you know where dioxin comes from in forest fires? Not from plastics. Salt. Salt is composed of sodium chloride. Chloride is the element that is in dioxin. So where you have salt in forest fires in the ground, you naturally get dioxin. Volcanoes produce dioxin also.
Tara?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at three charts there would make one guess that each pie was equal size.
Excellent.
But I'm guessing that they're not. I mean, the first pie is the total released in 87. Okay.
Absolutely where I wanted you to think, because pie charts aren't a good thing. So we took that data and we massaged it a slightly different way. And we put the same data and we took out the natural occurring forms of dioxin. I just looked at man-made and I put them on this chart so you could see how the total volume of dioxin, I don't care if it comes from an incinerator, a burn barrel, or some other man-made device. Look at how significantly it changed on this chart from the 80s to into the 2000s. Again, though, you can see the red part of the chart is the waste to energy. And if you look on the far left, you see that was a big chunk of it. Significantly reduced into the 90s. And you can barely see it on the bottom of the chart as you look into the 2000s. Now, this is what's happening on a national level. Why did this happen? It happened because the environmentalists, rightly so, said dioxins are a concern and we demand different regulations, and they sued. And there were a lot of lawsuits across our nation. We were not alone in the lawsuits we experienced here in La Crosse County. And as those rules and regulations went into effect, they changed technology at waste-to-energy facilities as to how emissions were controlled. And we now see that this has had a very positive effect. A couple years ago, I had a chance to go down to southeastern United States, and I had a chance to tour a bunch of waste energy plants. And the very same things that you're doing with activated carbon and what you're doing with urea and other things here at Xcel were being done in plants down there. So this is not a local phenomenon. It's something that we're seeing across the country. And what I wanted to get out of that data is that here EPA has looked at the same data, and we've looked at it, and our consultants have looked at it, and you can spend hours if you Google dioxin and you'll find all the same data. And here are the big things that you'll see. Nationwide, the dioxin emissions from municipal waste combustors have decreased 99% from in the 80s to the year 2000. Bring it home locally. At French Island, it's reduced 86 in between 2001 and 2007, 96 between 2001 and 2009. We see the same. Shouldn't we have had 99% reduction? And if not, why not?
But we don't get that reduction for nothing. That plant in French Island cost us $2.3 million to get scrubbers in there to bring that dioxin level down to where we are. So we don't do it for nothing.
Absolutely. It's absolutely
actually,
right.
It's actually over $10 million. The investment by La Crosse County was over $10 million into the scrubbers. Yes, we borrowed over $10 million.
Joe Veenstra.
I reviewed this before, obviously, and I was kind of curious. This the graph that was up before referenced the man-made production of dioxin being reduced. Do you know how big the dioxin reduced total from the 80s till now, approximately, including all the other stuff that we have less control over?
That I don't know.
Okay. And I was, because if the forest fires, it seems there have been more, it seems, I don't know, especially in California. is there any difference between that you said there's multitudes of kinds of dioxin, including some that are 10,000 times more poisonous than others. Do they have an idea of what the sources are of the more toxic types? Are there more from, for example, waste, municipal waste versus forest fires? Like the forest fires might be great for everyone and no one cares, versus some other source of dioxin?
From what I've seen in the literature, it is not necessarily the materials that are being burned. It is the temperature at which you're burning the materials. And so it's the lower temperature burning, such as a burn barrel, a forest fire, and other things, that produce some of the dioxins of greater concern. Now, that doesn't mean to say that if you have a waste-to-energy facility that is not operating properly, that you couldn't produce some nasty dioxins. And that's a question, you know, we could get a toxicologist in here and we could discuss an hour. I didn't quite want to get that deep. What I wanted to get out of this, though, for you is our waste-to-energy plant is different than most other waste-to-energy plants. There's two types in our nation. One is called a mass burn, and in a mass burn facility, you take all your garbage and you simply dump it in and burn it. So when your child throws that plastic flashlight with two batteries away, it's burned in there, okay? Ours is different. Our facility is called an RDF facility, refuse-derived fuel. We bring the waste in, we grind it up, and we take the heavy fraction out. If there's some batteries in there, or if there's some other bad things, they're heavy, they will fall out, they're not burned. What we've seen across on the nation is that the emissions from plants like ours, RDF, and there's quite a few in Minnesota, have lower emissions than the mass burn units. That's one of the reasons why we have 96% reduction. We didn't have to go as far because our operation is cleaner in the reductions that we did. The other thing that I thought was real important is that we're now having routine presentations from Xcel to the county board and at the annual solid waste meeting where they come in and discuss their dioxin emissions, their emissions from the plants. I think that's excellent. And when we took a hard look at their permits and we didn't take the information that Xcel gave, we took their data and we reviewed it with the county's consultant, you know, it did indicate they are 5 to 20% of their permit. This provides me great reassurance in that we're not right at the edge of our permit, that we're almost exceeding. It tells me that we're well below the maximum limit that they have for dioxin emissions in that plant. So that's the first thing that I see in dioxins here.
Hank, I have a question. Do we know which types of dioxins are being produced by our plant? Is it the innocuous ones or the really, as you describe them, nasty ones?
It will be a mixture of all of them.
Okay. And so the measurement doesn't separate out which ones are coming out?
No. And that would be extremely difficult to do.
Okay.
A question that everybody likes to ask, then. How many burn barrels would it be equivalent to be to the French Island facility? Take a guess. 1 or 2. Now, where this data comes from is Minnesota Pollution Control Agency took a look at. They have a lot of weight. They have a lot more waste to energy than we do in Wisconsin. They took a look at it, and they found that about one burn barrel equals the dioxin emissions from about 200 tons per day at plant. We do from 270 on up to 350 tons. So that's how we came to 1 or 2 barrels. That is not important. It's not important whether it's 1 barrel or 10 barrels. Okay, the important thing here is that the emissions of waste to energy has been significantly reduced. And it reminds me of my brother on his blood pressure medication. He didn't know he had a blood pressure problem. He finally got some medication for it, and when it was way up there, he didn't think much of it. He got his medicine and he got it down there. Now he has it down at the correct level. But he's such a worrywart that if it's up 3 points the next day, he's like, oh my gosh, is my medicine not working? Is something wrong? That's exactly where we are. We have dropped our emissions down to well within permit limits. And you're going to see little deviations in it. But the important thing is they are significantly low and they're well within the permit. I'm going to come back to this issue because there's a third independent party that's going to verify whether or not there are any health issues with our waste-to-energy Xcel plant. I'm going to come back to that. I have strong fingers, but if you could advance it for one slide. Can I go back one? I think we jumped over one. Okay. I want to take a second now. If that's waste to energy, how does waste to energy compare with coal generation? And with the Public Works and Infrastructure Committee, we gave them handouts that SWANA on a national basis prepared, where they did a very detailed study. This was done in 2006. And it talks about a comparison of waste energy facilities to fossil fuel powered plants. And the first thing they said, it's comparable in nitrogen oxide. That's the same thing that you have from your car, is nitrogen oxide. There is less carbon dioxide coming from a waste energy facility. There is less sulfur dioxide. Now these three compounds, nitrogen oxide is nitric acid, carbon dioxide is carbonic acid, and sulfur dioxide is sulfuric acid. These are called the acid gases. Some people refer to these and they say, oh, the acid gases. They come out of any combustion process. This is the correct chemical way to term them, and it isn't the emotional way to say these are the acid gases. Any combustion process produces these gases. Waste to energy is better. The EPA on a national level, with all these changes in emissions, has now determined that waste to energy is considered on a national basis a minor source of mercury and dioxin compared to coal. A minor source. The EPA has also concluded, and it's talked about in this study, that waste-to-energy power plants produce electricity with less environmental impact than almost any other source of electricity. That's really good. Now I want to talk about greenhouse gases, okay? Is there anybody in here in the last 3 days that hasn't heard the term greenhouse gases on the TV or in the paper? This is the 600-pound gorilla that is now stepping forward. When we were talking about dioxins in the 80s, we weren't talking about greenhouse gases. We are now talking about greenhouse gases. They are already affecting the county. The Solid Waste Department, as of January 1st, was under rules with the EPA to report the generation of greenhouse gases from the landfill. Carbon dioxide and methane are produced by the biological decomposition of waste, and we have to report that. So these laws are taking an impact already, and we're one of the first departments that are being affected by it. Greenhouse gas is important to us because people are equating it to climate change, and they're expecting things to be done. About a year or a year and a half ago, Steve asked Brian Tippetts to take a harder look at this issue. And he asked our consultant, RTI, to take a look at our system relative to greenhouse gases. And they did. And what they did is they used the EPA Municipal Solid Waste Decision Support Tool. This is a big computer model that's generated on a national basis, and you plug in all your data. How much garbage do you produce? How much recycling do you do? Do you use waste to energy? How far do you haul your garbage? You plug this all in, and it will tell you what your greenhouse gas generation is. That study found that our system has the lowest greenhouse gas emissions compared to other county and private solid waste operations in the state of Wisconsin. And it has the lowest greenhouse gas emissions because we're using waste to energy, and we are getting electrical production not from coal, but we're getting it from the paper in the waste to energy. That we're not hauling our garbage, not at least not all of it, some of it we are, up to Eau Claire, and we're not consuming diesel fuel and other things for the hauling of that. That we do a lot of recovery and a lot of diversion. They pointed out that some of La Crosse County's diversion programs, like our shingle recycling, our wood waste, these other things, are very good, and as a result, they minimize greenhouse gases, and we produce less methane. We produce less methane because we direct our garbage to the waste-to-energy plant, and the carbon fraction is combusted. We extract the energy on the front end. Other people in the landfill business that don't have waste energy, they bury it. They wait for the bacteria and the bugs to decompose it. It produces the methane. They try and recover the methane. You can't recover all of it. And they then burn the methane energy. Methane is a worse gas than carbon dioxide. It is 20 times worse as a greenhouse gas. That's why they came to this conclusion that our system is one of the best. It is the best in terms of greenhouse gas emissions in the state of Wisconsin.
Dandina.
Are you satisfied with the rules of EPA and DNR as a relation to that bill that's coming down that you referred to here? Because there are a lot of things in that bill that are really off the wall. If that bill goes through without amending, every farmer that's out here in the countryside around the United States will have to pay $75 for the gas emitted by each one of the cows on his farm. So I think, you know, they're going to run the farmers out of business real fast if they're going to put a tax on cows, because the farts that the cows make are going to be charged $75. And I think you better look at what's in that bill. We may want to debate that for a while.
And in terms of the regulatory requirements for reporting, I'm online with that. I am going to be your department head, and I'll leave that debate to the politicians.
Well, you better leave it up to more than the politicians.
Yes.
I don't think most of them understand.
Here's how I think it will affect us in the county, though. I think we may be moving to a society where we're going to tax people that produce greenhouse gas. I think La Crosse County is going to get a credit for what we do. And that, will our credit come valuable then with our gas to energy plant, or will our be bought by somebody and we'll actually make money on the fact that we have greenhouse gas credits? I don't know. I think we're headed in that way.
Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want any answer. I'm just curious if female farmers have to pay $75 a cow. But I wanted to ask Hank a question about how many facilities in the state, you said we're the best in the state, out of how many, and who's at the other end of the spectrum?
There's about 47 municipal landfills in the state of Wisconsin. There's only two waste energy, Barron and ourselves. I believe our facility is better because of its size and it's a refuse-derived fuel. If you go to some of the smaller county landfills that do not have gas collection, that's a danger because they're releasing the methane directly to the air. There's no capture there. There was no conversion at waste energy. That, to me, is the worst. In between would be the large privates that, while they have a large site and they don't have waste energy, they are capturing the methane gas, and they are burning that to produce electric generator.
So we're the best of all landfills, not just the two waste-to-energy facilities?
We're the best.
In the RTI study, what were they looking at?
Systems.
Okay.
They were looking at systems, solid waste systems. So they
not
could look at...
Not just a facility.
Right. And so they looked at transportation, how much recycling you do, how you run your landfill, whether you have waste energy or not, how far you haul your garbage. So some of those big private waste management systems, while they're doing a great job capturing all that gas, they are consuming a tremendous amount of fuel driving garbage 100 miles or more to get it to those facilities. And that hurts them then in when you do a greenhouse gas footprint. And you might see that in the future at someday. We may come to you and say we're asked to do a greenhouse footprint to see how big our carbon footprint is with our system.
Thank you.
So then we come to the question, is waste to energy green? Because everybody likes to say, I'm green. I've got a green product. I've got a green car, even though it's purple. That's a question that needs to be answered. Well, the first way I'm going to answer that is that it is not about putting waste to energy ahead of recycling, reusing, or any other things. We still need to follow the hierarchy that La Crosse County is and the state of Wisconsin and the nation is. And that hierarchy starts with the best thing you can do with solid waste is prevent its generation. Buy products that have minimum waste. The second best thing you can do is reuse as much of your waste that you can. In a factory, if you're producing waste, if there's some way you can get it back into the process to reuse it, that's the second highest hierarchy. The third highest thing you can do is to recycle. So recycling plastics is better than waste to energy. It conserves more fuel. It has less of a greenhouse gas impact. That has been well proven on the hierarchy. If you can't recycle it, what's the next best thing for waste? To burn it in a waste to energy plant and recover the energy. If you can't burn it in a waste energy plant, what's the next best thing? Put it in a landfill. What's the bottom of the list? There is something worse than a landfill. Well, sort of a burn barrel. Incineration of garbage without energy recovery is the bottom of the list. So, reuse and recycling first. It is not about waste energy being better than recycling. It is not. The second thing is, you've seen from all these studies that the combustion in waste to energy results in significant greenhouse gas, in a reduction in significant greenhouse gas emissions. The other thing you're seeing is you're seeing national laws being passed where they're now classifying refuse as a biofuel. All these things are telling me that they're beginning to look at garbage as green, that component where we can do these things with. There's another way to look at is waste energy green. I could go through this whole list and you'll see that they apply to our system. We have benefited greatly with waste energy in La Crosse County in that we're able to continue to use our existing property. We minimize the amount of land we have in landfilling, and that this is serving us quite well. That's one benefit we enjoy here. There are other benefits that are occurring. There was a major study also done by SWANA in December of 2009, very recent, and it talks about waste to energy being classified as a green component in solid waste management. And so I think that again tells you we're on the right track. So now we got to start taking all this information and say, what does it mean to us? What does it mean to you as supervisors and leaders? First off, I believe you're on the right track. You're following the hierarchy of solid waste management in La Crosse County. The things we're doing with the diversion of waste, the waste to energy, and the programs we are involved in here, not having a long haul of our waste and other things, are reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And I think we're doing that good. I also see that our future is more secure. Our landfill has 23, 25 years more of life. We have an additional area on our property that we could expand for additional 20 years. We are secure. You saw an example of this when we brought to you the fee increases. When other people received the $7 fee increase from DNR, we only had to raise Xcel $1. We only had to raise most of the refuse at the land $2. Our system buffered us from those impacts and made us more secure in the future, and it will continue to do that. And then the final question, the investments you made in the past years, in the 80s and 90s, towards the retrofits at Xcel have paid off. They have reduced the greenhouse emissions. They are working. We are achieving compliance. That is a good system. So the next question I have is in terms of what this means to you, how will plastic recycling in the city of La Crosse, city of Onalaska, other cities, affect the county system then? And I think many of you are familiar with Dale Hexum's report. He's looking at approximately 200 tons per year of plastics 1 and 2s being recycled from the city. That is not significant. I have that much deviation on a monthly basis, sometimes weekly, on the waste tonnage going to Xcel. It is not significant. It is not significant in the airspace that it would consume in the landfill. It is not significant on how it would impact dioxin production at the Xcel plant. So waste to energy is not going to hinder, or it doesn't help the recycling of plastics. The recycling of plastics has to be a society decision that we want to do that. I do have to say that the recycling of plastics is preferred to burning them in waste to energy because that is less greenhouse emissions. It is a better use of that fossil product. What should we do next? Well, couple thoughts for you on that. Remember I said I was going to come back to you about all this dioxin information as to what this means. Xcel is in the process of doing a study to look at changing their permit that they would like to, instead of burn 50% wood and 50% garbage, they would like to, in some boilers, burn 100% garbage. That requires them to change a permit. That's not unusual. In fact, it's unusual to see the permit requirement we have in Wisconsin that requires you to burn 50% wood and 50% refuse. Most other states allow you to burn 100% refuse. But irregardless of that, the DNR is going to take them through a permit process. In that permit process, Xcel has to provide monitoring data on that plant. And the DNR will is in the process of getting that data from Excel, and they are going to do a multi-pathway health risk assessment of that plant. What that means is they look at all the sources of contaminants coming out of the French Island plant. They look at what goes up the smokestack and what you might breathe. They look at what goes up the smokestack and which much may go into the river water, and then you catch a fish and consume that. They look at what might go up the smokestack and end up on our cropland, and then you eat those crops. So they're looking at multi-paths of different contaminants to see how it can affect people. That is underway, and there will be a public process to input that and to discuss that. And so you should be aware of that as supervisors, because if people have questions or they have comments, we have a way to point them to this process, and the DNR is the independent agency who's doing this. It is not Excel's consultant who is doing this. It is not our consultant who is doing this. It is the DNR taking the data, analyzing it themselves. A final thought for you. When we talked about recycling Excel, if we want to improve recycling programs, we should consider a more regional approach. What is one of the things that's hindering recycling? When we fragment it up into individual municipalities and they have partial programs, they have small programs, they do not have an economy of scale. That's why we have gone to county landfills versus town landfills. Economy of scale and other reasons. And I brought this issue was brought up to you, and I'm going to remind you of this issue, not in a negative way, but in a very positive way. Remember when we went through the fee discussion and I came before you and I discussed the fees, and I mentioned to you that Steve, both Steve Doyle and Steve O'Malley, arranged a meeting during the fee discussion with the two mayors, the city of La Crosse and the city of Onalaska. And during those two meetings to discuss the fee increases, while we did a lot of hand-wringing about increases, one of the comments was made that there are a bunch of solid waste issues that could be better addressed on a regional basis. Collection, recycling, how we fund solid waste, taking it off of tax levies and finding other ways of doing this. And during those meetings, the mayors and Steve Doyle and Steve O'Malley turned to Dale Hexum and Jason and myself and said, by the end of the year, we want you to look at how we could assess this area better and come up with an assessment that could be done with the cities and the county to come up with better ways to doing that. And we are about within a month or so of returning our recommendations to the mayors, to Steve Doyle, to Steve O'Malley, saying, here is the assessment that we should do. Now, I'm not saying we should stop recycling until we do that. If the city of La Crosse desires to go ahead, by all means, go ahead. But their contract for recycling will be up in 2012, and through work with the county, we may have a better regional approach to recycling after 2012. So that is happening. That's happening through a solid waste evaluation, and we're looking at collection, recycling, and better funding mechanisms for municipal government. So, pulled all these ideas together and brought you up to date.
Questions? Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you. Hank, the city of La Crosse is going to implement the extra fee for recycling the plastic. Now you're talking about countywide. Is there going to be a fee for that? Being a resident of the city of La Crosse, I have to pay both. What plans do you have in the future for a county recycling plastic?
The county has no plans right now for a recycling program. And what we would do is we would work with the two cities and decide if there's even a role for the county in recycling. It could be that we'll simply help study and come up with ideas for them. It's quite possible that the two cities might create a metropolitan area totally separate from the county and that they'll institute their own programs. It could be the opposite. We could have Dale go like this: I've had enough of collection and recycling, and county, you take this over. And it could be that if they ask the county, we could set up certain collection districts, we could set up certain collection programs, and we'd be happy to run that program. We would then have to look at how that would be funded. Would that be a special assessment versus a tax levy? I don't have those answers. That's the exact purpose of that study, to be done with the city of La Crosse and the city of Onalaska.
And let me just interject. The purpose of that study, and that decision will be coming back to you, is not to give you recommendations, but to give you, as policymakers, the county board, the city councils, the tools to be able to say what are the pros and cons of these decisions. It's not to give you a recommendation, say, this is the method or the format that ought to be there. These are the pieces of information that you as policymakers will then be able to use, both cities and the county board, to decide should there be any change in the system that's there. But you need additional information to do that. This will not be a study that says here's the recommendation of the best decision. It's the policymakers that need to make those decisions.
Monica Cruz.
Thank you. Two questions that are related. First of all, what percent of solid waste in La Crosse County is being presently burnt? And if XL switches to 100% garbage burning, would we have to bring in garbage from outside the county, or how would that work?
Very good questions. We burn, we bring about 70,000 to 73,000 tons to XL. Okay. We take about 72,000 tons at the landfill, so it's almost 50-50. If Excel wins that permit change, it does not mean they can burn more garbage. What it means is they have flexibility in how they use their boilers. The constriction that Excel has is not their boilers. It's their processing area where they shred the refuse and where they store it. So XL has said, we are not doing this so that we can burn 140,000 tons of garbage. Their plant cannot process that and handle it. What they want to do is have the flexibility to run this boiler on all wood, this boiler on all refuse. If this one goes down, they can keep the wood going here, and it doesn't interfere with this, and vice versa. So it's an operational flexibility, not a waste increase.
Terry Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to the previous question about the work group. Can either you, Steve Doyle, or you, Steve O'Malley, or you, Hank Cook, talk about how villages and or towns are involved or will be involved? Or is that coming down the road? You've just mentioned the county and the two cities.
Well, at that meeting, it was not all of the various towns and so forth. So, I mean, I think we got to do this one step at a time. But, Steve or Hank, you want to add to?
Well, again, from my perspective, and Hank can build on this, is the long-term direction of regional consolidation or collaboration of hauling, recycling, any of the issues that could happen will be guided by the two main cities. They're the largest producers, both commercially and otherwise, and whatever direction they go, the villages and towns would have the option of being a part of that. So if they make a decision when both of their hauling contracts come up to do something that actually allows for more collaboration between the two of them, villages and towns would be able to tie into that. So they're really the moving party. If they choose to stay with their existing procurement process and don't make a change, then there are less options for villages and towns. So we have to be involved in that, we meaning the county, to be able to represent the villages and towns as we go along, but obviously involving them in the decision-making process. But the two main players, because they're the volume of garbage and the volume of waste, will be guided by those two entities. And as their contracts come due, I think 2012 is City of La Crosse, and when is Onalaska?
About 2015.
2015. So this is really prospective, trying to say, okay, what are the choices? What are the decisions that other communities are making about how? What are the options?
But as we are at that table, is the perspective of, or the interests of towns and villages part of what the county is communicating? I mean, it just seems to me that clearly there are towns and villages that are doing recycling now that are, you know, light years ahead of the city of La Crosse on this, on the recycling issue at least. And it seems to me that the county has the opportunity at least to make sure that those villages and towns' futures and their, you know, more opportunities for them is something that we could be saying in those conversations. So I guess the question is, are we in fact saying that out loud, even though City of La Crosse, City of Onalaska are the big players because of volume? Are we reminding them that whither thou goest, it does clearly have an effect on towns and villages, or we're not?
Yes, and that will be a part of this, okay, the assessment. The only discussions that have happened so far is the concept of what would an assessment look like. How do you examine the options? All those decisions will come back to both councils and the county board to ask those tough questions. Is the assessment adequately considering, and where would the villages play a part? Where would the towns play a part? Okay. This is very, very preliminary in the whole process.
Do we even know at this point the answer to the question of what authority the county would have? I mean, if the cities say, we don't want to play ball with you, I don't know that we have the authority to simply say we're going to do this, like it or not, right? You know, so I would look at it kind of a couple of analogies you could do is one is our household hazardous materials program where everybody has signed on, and the other one would be LAPC, the La Crosse Area Plan Commission, which is a transportation planning body that is made up of the urbanized parts of the county. You know, and it may be recycling work somewhat like that too. So a lot of different models that could be used, and we wanted Hank to get in here, and so you are at the very beginning of this, but there's a lot down the road yet. John, I get you next.
Yeah, I was going to just say something similar to what you just said, Steve, that I'm glad that the county's at the table or leading the charge or whatever it is, but we have limited ability to tell cities what to do. But I do think that household hazardous waste model is probably a good model to work from. We're just kind of a per capita assessment or whatever it is. I think that's a good. But my question was, you know, I'm always kind of curious about who's making decisions. Who's on this work study group? Is it the public, Dale Hexum, you, and somebody from Onalaska, their public works director? Is any private contractors in that table? Or
yes, we sent out invitations, and Dale and Jason Gilman, the planner from Onalaska, myself, we sent out invitations. Maureen has been there. Jay, I think, has attended one of our beginning meetings. Hilltoppers has been at this meeting. I think there's been a couple other people there. One of the questions that's right in front of us right now is that as we get the rough draft assessment, the scope of work, one of the questions is, should we have a meeting with all the municipalities in La Crosse County, show them the assessment, and see if they're interested, that if they want to be part of this as it moves forward? And some of them may say, no, we're not interested. Some may say, we're interested, but keep us informed. We don't want to be part of it, nor do we want to financially support it, and that's fine. Some of them may say, our system will be different than an urban system. And so do your urban system first, and we'll see how it functions. We'll learn some things. Come back and design me a rural system. And some of the things you said about the rural areas actually being ahead of recycling is true, because they have some different programs that were easier to implement. So this is not one size fits all, and we're not going to exclude anybody, and we're going to make our information available to people. And it will be like the HHM-type facility. If you want to be part of it, you can. We're there to help the two cities get to that point. If the two cities say, do more than help, be the leader, we're ready to put those shoes on and become the leader, too.
But in answer to my question about who are the members of the work study group, it's a floating crowd? It's not, it's just anybody who shows up, or...
No, it has been consistently Dale, Hilltopper, Jason Gilman, myself, Nick Nichols from Sustainability, our coordinator there. Those have been the key people that have been coming.
Yeah, I always just want to know where stuff is coming from and who they are, you know. So yeah. I always, a little cynical, I guess.
Unfortunately, everybody isn't as interested in garbage as I am.
And just to be clear, for the assessment to proceed, that's a decision that has to come back to this body and both councils. So this is just work that's going on, that we're making sure that when it comes to you, you go, oh, you've at least heard about it before the choices and decisions are presented to you.
Any other questions for Hank? Hank, I would just observe that as excited as you get about garbage, my guess is that your brother's not the only one with high blood pressure in the family.
No problem there, and I still love it.
All right.
Thank you.
Steve's going to talk about equalized value. More exciting stuff.
This is going to be very brief, but it's a follow-up to the presentation I made at the last board meeting about budget and impact of value. Hopefully you kept, and whether you have it with you or not, I do have some additional copies of the two-page handout that talked about your own individual property tax bills and that distribution. I just wanted to quickly go through, if Linda can call up my PowerPoint. Most of these slides are the same thing. I only have one new handout that's actually on your desk, but I want you to know how timely this is, particularly as you're dealing with legislative issues with WCA. Particularly that in the equalized value apportionment data, if this wants to go ahead, I thought I had strong fingers too. Could you page down? This is just a review, but remember that there are at least four items, but particularly four items that impact your property taxes or the property taxes that one of your residents pay. And the particular one that's coming to a highlight right now for most of you, as well as statewide, is number three, the apportionment among the municipalities within an area. If we could post down again. This is an article, and you're not going to be able to read it, but I want to point out it was discussed this morning at the Cracker Barrel and with Chamber and the legislators. This is the town of Webster in Vernon County, and what happened to them was very similar to this distribution that's happening that you see illustrated in the handout that I gave you, but this one was even more drastic. Residents in the town of Webster were met with an unexpected spike on their property tax bills last month. Most experienced 17 to 25% increases, even with a statewide 3% tax levy cap, partly because the assessment was either late or amended. And what I'm going to show you in the handout is that that's one of the things that's impacting you is because of the antiquated system we have for property tax assessment, and you'll hear Department of Revenue propose their idea, and you'll hear this issue debated and discussed, is it's causing drastic shifts because the information is inaccurate when it goes in. And the shifts that are happening that I'm going to show you on the handout are what's going on all across the state, and it's even more so in rural areas because of use value tax, because farms aren't taxed at the same level as other land values. And when you are catching up to equalized value because you've either amended it later on or you haven't done the right assessment up front, it's causing major changes later on. And I'll show you an illustration of that in the handout that I've given you. If you could page ahead. I did hand this out to you, and it showed the different distribution. Remember, City of La Crosse at the top was losing about 0.7, almost identical to what the City of Onalaska picked up as a percentage of property tax. In the right-hand side, equalized value is actually the formula that they use, and those numbers, if you go to the next one, are actually illustrated better. When I abbreviated it, I didn't point out that the total equalized value for the county is reduced to $29.5 million or $30 million. That's not a very good illustration of what the true value is, and that's actually on the handout. So that's going to show you a little bit closer. If we go one more handout, there we go. In front of you, and if you take a few moments with this and take it home with you, you'll end up seeing what's actually happening from 2007 to 2008 to 2009, the progression or change in equalized value. This is total value before apportionment. So let me just stay at the top. You'll see that $2.9 billion worth of value in 2007 is in the city of La Crosse. It's a very slow increase to 2.932 and then 2.936. Almost a flat line growth over that period of time, but you notice what's happening is that the percentage of the total tax base supported by City of La Crosse actually declined from 39% to just under 38%. So the red arrows that you're seeing on the far right are the change in share of county taxes. Same thing happened for Holman, Hamilton, Madary, Barrie, and Bangor this year. But what's happened in the meantime in each one of those, and here's where I want to get the illustration that ties back into the Vernon article. If you look at West Salem, about midway towards the bottom there, you notice that they were worth, in 2007, $274 million. Through reassessment and through trying to actually reconcile what happened, they declined in value. Now, Dennis, I bet you don't think your community declined in value from 07 to 08. That was an adjustment that was made that artificially lowered their percentage of county taxes from 3.67 to 3.6. Then they caught up this year, and that's one of the reasons that it went back up. Same thing happened to Holman. If you go to Holman at the top, but in a little different area, from 07 to 08, they went up from 5.8 to 6.27. This year, they caught up and dropped the other way, which is why they ended up seeing more of a savings. Those little shifts that happen when there's a mistake done or a late reporting of value, it ends up being caught up the next year. So it accelerates the kind of change that's happening. Let's go to Shelby, for example, which saw one of the biggest increases this year. You notice that in 2007, they paid 5.14% of county taxes. This year it's 5.16%. Didn't feel like that, did it, when you looked at your property tax bill? It was because last year it dropped off. Again, all of those are based on adjustments and catching up in equalized value that are adjustments either done because the assessors didn't get all their work done, they didn't all report on time, and or Department of Revenue had to make adjustments or assumptions that get caught up the next year. Same thing with Town of Onalaska. Remember, the two that seem to be the most accurate are City of Onalaska and City of La Crosse, but even in City of Onalaska, I don't know all the answers to this. These are just the numbers that were reported. But for City of Onalaska, which saw some of the biggest increases, right, Ann? On your property tax bill, you actually saw a decline from 07 to 08 in total value, from $1.5 billion to $1.546 billion. So part of the impact this year for their tax bills going up that much was not just the loss of value, relatively speaking, in La Crosse compared to everybody else, or the flatline growth. It was that catch-up. Jeff Blusky and I believe that this is, and Carl Green does, that this is part of the result of an assessment system that's not working as fairly as it could, and that it affects everybody, not just those that are in the towns or villages that don't have up-to-date assessments. It affects everybody because there's always that catch-up that ends up happening. Now, you'll see in the Wisconsin Counties magazine this month, if you get a chance to read this, how controversial this issue is statewide, and that for the most part, even counties are leery of taking this on, so we're not advocating that this should be a county responsibility, but this, in your own backyard, in your own towns, your own villages and cities, illustrates the variability of not having a fair assessment system. So that's not taking a position on it. It's pointing out that you're seeing these drastic fluctuations, and you saw it in your own property tax bills. When you see that kind of fluctuation, it's because we have one of the most archaic assessment systems in the nation. Wisconsin County's article talks about that we understand that the system doesn't work as effectively as possible, but they're even talking about that perhaps 5-year turnaround and having counties take it over without some other kind of analysis of how to pay for it is too fast to turn around, and they're talking about the conclusion of Dave Callender's article is talking about a legislative study commission. Well, that means that it probably isn't going to make any change. But I want you to understand, as policymakers, this is an illustration of why you see some of those changes. Luckily for us this year, you know, knocking on wood, it wasn't as drastic as that example in Vernon. That Webster town in Vernon saw 17% to 25%. Now, maybe it wouldn't have been as drastic if it had been more level, because what you should see, all things being equal and being fair, by and large, you should see a relative increase in value each year. Remember, the reason that this is so highlighted right now is that values, market values, are either flat or declining, right? Home values, everything, not as drastic as Nevada or California or New York or other places, but that's why this is coming to the forefront so much. Those kind of marginal changes in previous years of equalized values going up 6-7%, you won't find those. It won't be as drastic in your individual property tax bills. And I was hoping that the information I gave you last time and that this illustration is helpful for you to actually see what that impact is. So, for example, if I went to town of Hamilton, I think if I remember right, Ray, last year your county portion and your taxes went up higher than they did this year.
Just huge.
Just huge, yeah. I think I paid you the $2. Anyway, this year, your portion of the county tax bill dropped by like $50 just on that portion, if I remember right.
As it should be.
As it should be, yeah. And everybody else is appreciative. They wanted to give that to you. But the point being that if you look at town of Hamilton, in 2007, the total value of that community was $197 million. It jumped to $216 million, which was one of the reasons that his tax bill went up. But look how much it dropped this year. Now, does anybody think really there was that much drop in value? No, it was trying to catch up the variations of an assessment system that is not as current as other systems in other states. So I'm hoping that this helps you. I'll open up the floor for questions, Mr. Chair. But I didn't want to spend a lot of time on this, but the illustration is not that City of Eau Claire got a deal and other people were paying more in taxes. The illustration is that equalized value and the current assessment system does not fairly distribute tax burden, and that historically we've been doing a lot more residential development outside the City of La Crosse, so there is a whole lot more shift of tax base going outside, and that's one of the difficulties that the City of La Crosse has had in working with controlling their expenses and tax bases, because we've actually had a tax system that encourages development outside the City of La Crosse. Remember all the vacant land study that we talked about and what's happening? This is an illustration of that, but it's even more complicated because of the assessment system we have that doesn't adequately account for true value each and every year that you're assessing taxes.
John Menninger.
Well, and I, you did a nice job there, and you said that we're not necessarily advocating for countywide assessing. I'm not sure why we're not advocating for countywide assessing, but when you say the system is archaic, what you're really saying is it's not professional. That's what you're saying, right?
Exactly.
That we don't mandate a professional approach to this in a lot of areas. People talk about local control.
Yeah,
but that means you can hire.
Standards aren't there.
You don't have standards all across the state so that you have a system that's fair and professional. That's why it's archaic, right?
Right, because the standards aren't enforced like they are in other states. We have more assessment districts in this state. We have a more fragmented system than any state in the nation. Any state in the nation. We have more adjustments that are made in our system because we don't bring things as close to 100% of value every year and pay for it. It is more expensive to do full assessment. But this is an illustration, and it's not just unfair to those that live in a city. It's unfair to you that live outside the city that see this kind of drastic fluctuation, because it's not as it's not as level as it would be, and it's not picking up every value change that happens between you and your neighbor. If you've had a chance to see Carl Green's presentation, he doesn't talk about the differences between municipalities. He talks about your home versus your neighbors versus the other neighbors. If you're not doing a good job of assessing and meeting standards, it's unfair within individual towns and villages as well.
Well, you don't have to go door to door very long to start hearing that comparison to your neighbor stuff.
Terry Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are some examples, and admittedly from much smaller municipalities, where they're really consistent in terms of their percent of the total. Do you have a sense as to why that is? Is it just because they're so small that
I think they have that few of changes? It's
okay.
When you have a lot of either new building, a lot mm-hmm. of change in value, reinvestment, a rapidly growing community like Holman, right? One of the fastest mm-hmm. growing areas in our community. There's so much catch up to have happen in what's going on that if they get a lot of new value, it should level off their taxes because the new customers are paying for their share, right? Mm-hmm. But if then you have to go back and catch up, does anybody believe that Holman's true value actually dropped from 2008 to 2009? Were people foreclosed on a lot of homes? Were a lot of people not building? No. I mean, that's a very healthy community. No, it's because of the system.
So Greenfield, Bangor, Holland, Rockland, where they're almost year after year, at least on this chart, you know, really consistently within a tenth of a percentage point or not, that it's because they don't grow. They don't have a lot of new
that's
growth.
That's my take on it. If Jeff were here, he'd be able to answer it more specifically. But Rockland's probably the best example. Not a lot of new building. Mm-hmm. The subdivision we already know about. I mean, it's basically been very level.
Thank you.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you use the term catch up, is that a defined geographical area? Is it within the county, within the state? Because you've referenced other states, and so who's catching up to who? And maybe, you know, if you can't do this in 20 seconds, I'll meet with you later.
Yeah. The concept of catch up, what I meant is that what happens when the assessor in that town or village comes back and finds properties that weren't assessed properly or were missed. Town of Onalaska had a huge number, what was it, just 2 years ago, where they completely missed assessing those. They had to catch up the next year. So the correction is a catch-up. When I refer to other states, it's that they have a centralized system that requires, based on professional standards, not just training, but that you've got to go and reassess each property every certain number of years, that you've got to physically drive by and or inspect. I think in Minnesota when I was in Rice County, it was like every 4 years. So you had to, on a rotating basis, and then those market sales actually mandated what happened in a neighborhood, what changes based on those market sales. So you couldn't have this level of fluctuation going on.
So then that catch-up area is whatever area that assessing unit, it's within
it's
that.
It's within that jurisdiction.
So right. Even on this doesn't reflect the difference between Madera and the city of La Crosse, because those are two separate
areas. But even within each municipality, I don't want to get too complicated here, yeah. But each municipality has different values, right? Different neighborhoods have different values. If you went to the area by Cass Street, large homes on Cass Street would have a different value than, say, on the north side up by the train station depot, right? Okay, so it's that specific. Professional assessing is that specific to like homes, to like neighborhoods, or like jurisdictions. And that you can compare value based on market sales. If you're on the border between La Crosse and Madera, you can compare those. Even if they're in two different neighborhoods, you can actually see what those market sales are and what those values are. And that's what a professional system does. And back to John's point, the reason I'm not advocating for it, because ultimately it's a policymaker's question. If you ask a professional opinion, we ought to have standards, we ought to have professional assessing, and it's done in most states on a countywide basis. But obviously decision makers, a lot more important than me, are going to be making those decisions. It's not up to me.
Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you. Mr. O'Malley, I've seen Carl's presentation. I talked to you briefly about that, mm-hmm. but it's extremely educational, and he explains the difference between assessed values, adjustments and that, and why we get behind and why we're playing catch-up. Basically, you just don't have time to do all this, and that's why the system is flawed in that respect. But I think for a future agenda, probably at a policy planning meeting, it's extremely educational. It really helps you understand all this and why things are the way they are.
Dan Vina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Using these same 3 years, we went into a pretty good depression. And if you took the city of Los Angeles or any of those counties out there, you would see a tremendous drop in property values because the number of foreclosures was at an all-time high. And we can't blame anybody but the banks on that, so I'm not going to get into that one. We were affected here, too, and I'd be curious to find out how many foreclosures were in La Crosse County and what effect it might have had on the total numbers in each one of these municipalities, because I have no way of knowing. I didn't follow that very closely. But there's some things that do enter in on some of these things that do happen. You know, we jacked Town of Hamilton up a fair amount when we reappraised the shoreline values of properties out along Lake Neshonoc. That had an increase in 2008, and I don't know how much that was, but it came up considerably. And there were some other things that happened, but use value assessment came into play in 2006 or 2007, which had an effect on the rural outland, the county outside of La Crosse, and that would have caused the rates to go down because the taxes on farms did go down with use value assessment, and I think that was probably in 07 maybe, because we're in 10 now. So there are some other things that do happen besides. You can't blame this all on the assessors, I don't think. They do not have a uniform way of reporting. I agree with that. But I do think that they are required to stay at 10% plus or minus true value, whoever considers the true value. And what is true value? You know, in California, it dropped, 30% of value? How do we know what true value is today? It's because somebody sold land. You know, my neighbor's farm just got sold for pretty big bucks, and I'm sure my value is going to go up next year because of that, because that's going to be a representative sale. How much it's going to be, I have no way of knowing. The assessor has no way of knowing until he gets those figures and looks at them and then says, okay, the percentage is going to be this. So it's pretty complicated.
I want to go back to Jerry's comment about Carl Green, and not that I wasn't paying attention to Mr. Bina, but I got to thinking about Jerry's comment. How many people here have seen Carl Green's presentation? I saw it at the Towns Association meeting, and it was really informative, and I'm wondering if, say, next month for our policy planning, if we got Carl in like half hour or an hour before policy planning for people who were interested in taking that in, how many people might be interested in doing that if we did it a little bit beforehand? Steve, let's check with him on that.
Sure.
And even if you've seen it before, you may want to see it again. I thought it was really helpful. So.
And Mr. Chair, that's a lead-in, actually, to our topic for the next meeting, if the board is willing. I've been in touch with representatives over at the city. We've talked about presenting our collaboration conference, challenging trends, and the potential solutions. That might be a great lead-in to that, and to invite the city council to hear that as well. They've been wanting to do that presentation, and we've never done that full presentation for the whole county board. So it would be one night that would tie into assessment policy, why the tax base and what's happening in the city of La Crosse is so critical to all of us, and the challenging trends of what that impact is, whatever district you're in, as well as some of the solutions that I know Carl Green, Larry Kirsch has a portion on it. We also have Jerry Kember, our superintendent, that can talk about a range of different solutions. We've been told that that collaboration conference was the best that we've had, so we've been wanting to bring that to all of you. So that would tie in very well if okay. folks think that would be valuable. I know the mayor and I'm sorry, the chair of your F&P committee, is it Marilyn Wigdahl, was interested in having that. So we're looking at inviting the city council members to attend a joint meeting with the county board next policy planning, which would be February 8th, or is it 9th? 8th is a Monday night, and we could tie the two together. I think it'd be very educational. I know a number of you were there for the collaboration conference, I think three or four, so it's...
So pencil that in, that we might start a little early for people who want to catch Carl's report on that. Okay. Other questions or comments for Steve? All right. Steve, is that it for you? Oh, no. Evaluation and work plan.
Last year we distributed this form in March, so we're getting this out to you a little bit early. And what I'd like is, in addition to feedback that you'd be kind enough to pass through to Steve, it is turned in directly to Steve, and then he has it summarized and brings it to me. We also do it with department heads. But in particular, as we're going into a new biennium, if you have items for the work plan that we should be adding that you can anticipate, we'll also give us a place to start when we have the county board retreat at reorganization to begin working from there. So what I usually do is I summarize the 2 years, what we've accomplished, what continues, and then I continually add your input into the goal setting that's there, and any additional feedback. Obviously, you have a number of ways to do that, either just turning in the form, or if you want to meet with me one-on-one, feel free. I'll take the time to meet with any board member on any topic, but in particular the form.
Everybody should have had it on your desk tonight. And if you want to turn it in yet tonight, that's great, too.
That's all I have.
That's it. Okay, now we're going to shift over to Corp Council. And we're listed for closed session. Let me read that. The board may entertain a motion to go into closed session pursuant to Wisconsin State Statute Section 19.85, Parent 1, Parent G, conferring with legal counsel for the governmental body who is rendering oral or written advice concerning strategy to be adopted by the body with respect to litigations in which it is or is likely to become involved, in this case, to wit, two cases, Stenberg et al. Versus County of La Crosse and Town of Campbell, and Olson versus Thorne and all sorts of other folks. Is there a motion to go into closed session as I just read? Tara Johnson, seconded by Bill Brockmiller. All in favor of going to closed session as read, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. We are in closed session, and we'll turn it over to Bill.
Talked about having the some of the historical societies come in and give a presentation. Remember, that was out of the budget things, and I just wanted to remind the chair of that at some point.
That's on our list of future agenda items. I don't know which meeting we'll fit that into, but it'll be more than just the concept, as I recall it, was you wanted to talk with and discuss a policy for the needs of outside agencies, which includes more than the historical society. It's any of the outside agencies. So
correct.
We need to figure out how to structure that, but we certainly will follow through.
Thank you, sir.
I'm wondering if someone from the Wisconsin DNRs will come to give us the results of their assessment of Excel after they do that. I think it was mid-year or something.
My understanding is that Hank, or you're talking about what Hank was just visiting about just a moment ago. Right, that will come before you in some format.
Thank you. Yep.
Anybody else? Seeing none, is there a motion to adjourn? By Don Meyer, seconded by Bill Brockmiller. All in favor of adjourning, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.